Hello, I'm Russell Jaffe, and I will be reading some of my Mad Libs poems with editor to the Super Duper Stars, Erica Mena.
Hello. Who,
she's here now. So I'm going to give you, Erica, a few words to fill in, some of which are a little out there, but we're gonna do this, I tell you. Okay, to start, a vessel.
Urn.
That's a good one. How about critical documentation or critical documents?
Death certificate. I'm feeling morbid, apparently.
Well, it is very cold outside. You would never know it in this soundless, windowless basement. A small age.
8 months.
Oh, that's so small. A neighborhood park.
Happy Hollow Park.
That's a real park Iowa City represent. Okay, a suburban street.
Ripley Street. Oh.
Great. I was going to say suburban street, grass dew, or a traffic cone.
Oh.
But you responded, and I'm using it. Ripley Street. Okay, a fear.
Triskaidekaphobia.
An emotion.
Nausea. I guess it's not an emotion so much as a physical reaction, but I feel like one can be emotionally nauseated, so.
And I'm going to use it. Right. I am not one to tell someone what their emotions are. Environmental phenomena.
Tornadoes. Or tornado singular, if you prefer.
Yeah. No, I'll do plural. Okay, something. Something. Don't think too hard.
Silver spoon.
Okay. Here's a very long one. A terrible noise, like when you realize for the first time that helium balloons pop, or the kind of elation when helium balloons do that thing to your voice, or both of them together. Yes, let the record show that's the only response I will ever take to that. Okay, your body part has all these organs in it. What's a selfish one? Plural.
Selfish organ, plural?
Yeah.
Spleens.
Yeah, most definitely. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, sky or body?
Cloudy.
Okay. Okay. Happy birthday. Your significant memory in which you carry yourself. Be an urn of death certificate, but today you're heir. I am not here in the fuzzed VHS-ness of 8 month baby teeth family camera lens birthday parties in Happy Hollow Park, so deal with it. I am not here in the junction of Ripley Street Mist, where triskaidekaphobia is what nauseous baby teeth in wet park benches do to tornadoes. Therefore, upon careful reflection, deal with it. I compare silver spoons to the kind of lowercase dissonance variation you feel when you realize an happens on your better nights entrusted to analog recordings and basement boxes like the bag of spleens you were. So happy birthday. But for want of the mortal lack, the cloudy body is dying. Erica, what I need from you is a filling.
Fluffy baby bird feathers. AKA down.
Everyone always says that one. That one's so played out. But I'll do it anyway for you, Erica. All right. That's all for this one. This one's called Giant Caterpillar Sleepover Party. Goodbye, dark green dark. Party time. You looked like a caterpillar in your sleeping bag, so we hit you with pillows until you claimed the zipper hit you in the tooth, and that's why you cried. Like a moth in the dark, you threatened to walk home and take in your surroundings as you did. Cool off, you cocoon gnasher, you. There's only one road in or out, buddy. We are so brave to hop loops around you laughing. We put on monster masks and chased you into the street. When you couldn't hop in your bag, you rolled, legs kicking for something to hold, struggling onto. You bite, you grow, we chanted. We dragged you back to the basement and stayed up all night yelling our favorite WWF wrestler anthems and flying between dusty basement mattresses, heads cracking the track lights. We caved in the drywall. We ate everything that looked like a leaf. Bubble tape, fruit roll-ups, fang after fang of gas station jerky. Why did you have to put on porn? We were 14, and when my dad would pick me up the next day, he told me about the videotape he found in the drawer next to my bed. Do I have any questions? Yes. May I stay wrapped up forever with my mouth protruding so that Capri Sun and torn shreds of Better Snack Time floor remains may be sacrificed to it? May I have newer, weirder landscapes now? You finally fell asleep. Everyone did. You aren't like other boys. You were worried, I said to myself. Swishing behind my teeth, it was a safe and quiet thing to say. You're too big and like a cylinder. Everyone was asleep then, and the TV was a lone tooth poking out of the bottom jaw of a skull no one invited. I am that sometimes. Who will be my girlfriend? Stars beyond the basement grates? The unmoved bikes in the bushes we abandoned temporarily? Girls rolling me between their arms and legs? Girls I roll myself around pressing? Girls pressing girls around me, and they'll always be saxophone and the drone of the almost sun behind the pricier edges of the suburban woods for rich people only? I wandered to the bathroom in the red dark of the off-over-there Chicago sky versus the tinted house in the woods windows. It may as well be the end of the world you're rolling off, you strange boy, I said to me. I'm glad you didn't hear me. 4 a.m. 5 a.m. I'm finally brave. I don't care. Bring them both on. Bring on what comes next. Come on. Jerking off over the sink in the wall-molding darkness, you may omit these lines if you wish. You may fill the walls with fluffy baby bird feathers. You may cut these lines, but you'll never have your own manifesto. Or you'll have your own manifesto someday. Look in the mirror. Girls? Nothing but lumps against dark lumps. Chocolate ice cream scoops in Coke. Pines tipped over in the embarrassingly sequestered expansive nighttime. Rumbling nostrils of the suburban tomb our parents birthed us in locked. Lock the door. Look in the mirror. There's a WWF ring covered in bloodstains. There's a silver rocket, care, and a lone road. There's a desert. And everything's so weird and tangled up. And it's always gonna be. Look down into the sink. It's a spike-mouthed pit monster. The best monsters have no eyes. I'm back. Last but not least. A year, please.
1455.
Oh, that was a good year for sure. How about this? Crowd noises.
Boo!
It's like you're in a crowd right now. That's amazing. Preparedness. That's a hard one to fill in.
If only people could see me, I would do the Boy Scout salute.
Okay, I'm going with that.
Yeah.
They're always prepared. Okay, the most secret zone with posters. What's a secret zone that has posters?
Oh, I've got one for you, Russell.
Yeah.
The third stall in the girls' bathroom.
Sounds incredibly romantic. A fortress.
The castle at Disneyland. A fortress of happiness.
Or terror for some, I would imagine. Okay. You and the way you feel. Don't think too hard now.
I know. Well, I can edit out those silences too. See? The magic of technology. Erica, joyous.
Okay. This is an untitled poem. Wild 1455, we laughed into you like WrestleMania, and the faces and the hair that framed faces that held big glasses and the other colorful shirts. Boo! Like a WWF ring playset covered in superheroes flying, attacking, prolonged Boy Scout salute. I'll come over after the next match and I'll never stop. We're forever around. Don't kick me out of your third stall in the girls' bathroom. I don't want to drape myself in your father's nightshade of sports equipment. I don't want to hide in your mother's medicinal tile plant castle at Disneyland. Just the one. But I always hated black and white tile, and I always felt nauseous in waxen spotlights. I'm always Erica, joyous. They saw me leave, and they asked me about school and if I'd lost weight and if I knew, even though Hulk Hogan had won the belt again. I decline in every way. I want to be your VCR. I want to be your drop-top lo-fi. I want to be your mem like a man. I want to kiss you like Rowdy Roddy Piper. Or not. Or we're not special. If you would like to be part of the Mad Lib Revolution, which will not be televised, you can go to anomalouspress.org, where you can fill them out yourself with your own URL QR codes, and they'll be right on your internet pages. You can do them yourself. Do them now. Do them right now.
One perfect white swan. The dirt path ended, an inch or two from the dumpster's lip. Just like that. No tapering, no trailing off. Just the firm flat of the path, now suddenly a chasm, a pit. And that pit half full of feces, broken brooms, hypodermic needles splayed at all angles, and all the peels and rinds and bone and scrap left over from feeding an ark. Everything mixed with everything. Urine-soaked newspapers and limp latex gloves. There was also, as I looked down, one perfect white swan. Dead, sure, but perfect. No sign of injury, no scent of decay. There was just the ivory mass of its body, the sinew loop of its neck. Swans are big, so big the crush of their beating wings can kill a man, and death does not diminish them. You can't throw away a swan, I thought. But, of course, you can. Every glass flower in the Harvard Museum. Smashed, scaling, full of flaws. Much of the cotton of commerce is obtained from two Mayan words meaning bitter juice. The seeds yield a valuable oil, the source of linen. The leaves were used for tea during the American Revolution, intensely bitter, a remedy against malignant fevers. Anchovy pear, Buen Mujer, Quebec to Minnesota, cultivated as a shade tree in Cuba, in waste places throughout, in shady situations, in rich woods and stagnant waters, native of Mexico, native of the old world, in ponds and streams, in bogs and on wet hillsides. The juice is used to make animal flesh, wood used for cigar boxes, in cabinet work, split leaves used for making hats. Wild succory, common chicory, blue sailors, bunk. Collected in 1834 by Mr. Henchman, two empty glooms and the perfect flower, perfect floret. Stamen showing coalescent filaments, boat-shaped, sterile filament, fertile frond. Fertile flower magnified 20 times, sterile flower cut in halves. Escaped northward and northward, pickled and eaten by the Spaniards, a fragrant odor, a typical form, a cosmopolitan plant. Larva, enlarged, hairs, much magnified, gall, seen from inside, natural size. Pride of India, enchanter's nightshade, wings, spikelet, keel, extensively cultivated, apparently abundant, origin, obscure.
Moscow. It looks like Moscow, she said, softly but decisively. They'd been traveling for days and days, weeks, and he'd never mentioned where they were headed. She never noticed signs. The daughter of the kind of people who never asked for directions, had no sense of direction, could not point out a direction to others, couldn't read a map, were prone to getting lost, didn't recognize the North Star, couldn't find where the bulk of the moss grew on the tree. And she never spoke to anyone because they traveled late in the night time. Sex, when they had it, happened at dawn, or around what she was relatively certain was lunchtime. Having been robbed of a sense of direction, nature had seen fit to give her a somewhat strong internal clock. It was brief and rough. They barely broke a sweat, picked a position and stayed with it, and she often gazed out the window for the duration, both to help the time pass and because she was curious to see if people everywhere were the same. So far, this seemed to be the case. She'd never been to Moscow, so she had no memory with which to compare what she was seeing. She felt him come, and then he rolled off her back and walked to the bathroom. She heard him brushing his teeth. "I'm sure it could be Moscow," she said. Everyone outside was wearing a warm coat. There were many stray dogs for a single street. She didn't remember being on a plane, but it was possible. Travel seemed to her an unremarkable thing, and she overlooked much of it by drifting off into her own thoughts. Once, when they were at a fair, she and her mother lost each other and themselves. She had been looking for the caged animals, and instead found herself in front of a mirror maze. Even at such a young age, she knew how dangerous it would be for a person with no sense of direction to go into a maze of mirrors. She saw a woman and a little boy of about her age coming out of the maze and approached them without hesitation. "Are you lost?" the woman asked. "My mother is, too." They walked all around the fair until they found her mother, wringing her hands and chewing her bottom lip. A monkey in a nearby cage followed suit. Her mother embraced her, the smell of her perfume strong, mixed with fearful, anxious sweat. "I was looking for the fortune teller," her mother offered as an explanation. "What were you looking for, sweetie?" She watched the monkey shake the bars of his cage violently, screaming at her, vicious and jealous. Tears of shame blurred her vision. She couldn't see her mother anymore. All that was left was the scent of her.
From Jorge, Sangre del Mar, by Joseph Maines and Donald Dunbar. Jorge was an animal who fell in love with air. Jorge, an aspiring ricochet endlessly in the upper limits of atmosphere. "Breathe," said Jorge to himself. Jorge said mimetically
in his interior.
All his souls and his bones and cells began to develop holes. Oh, Jorge.
Oh, Jorge.
Jorge was in Walgreens and stuffed a bobblehead Jorge inside his toolkit.
Inside his backpack and inside his shirt,
Jorge was a masterpiece. Hungry for his nighttime meds and wishing the best to all himself.
All the best civilizations toiled in misery for Jorge, berry eater.
"Justice is simple," Jorge says.
Justice
is English and turns a colorblind face cityscape blue. I'm in love with my face on every child, my womb of blood and rice paper fueling the hemisphere. The juice of lemon yields a nose, a look, a justice so divine only English could render its glory.
Its acceptance Jorge wasn't, and a rind of blood orange in the hymen tea makes Jorge happy.
It's how equally I think of you turning flowers on their stem, she panders in German. The stamen sunk full fathom. We are all beautiful and blonde and liberal and kind. She in a foreign tongue speaks. Kissing the Kool-Aid.
Ich dich, eine Jorge auch.
There's a forest in Jorge. A forest of pines, buildings, and shoots of pleasure growing and Kool-Aid boiling, muttering je ne sais, etc. in Spanish, a forest. A forest just asking for cowboys and disease and gat rot and prayer. Poor Jorge, berry eater, misses his target, guts his only begotten son.
My bed meets you in a similar way that I do. When I can't have my eyelids, I have the gray of truth,
the security of relapse,
the unwound testicle is flossed to the gods, and my prayer through the visualizer. It sounds more hopeful than it is,
seeing light as meat, laid sweet in bedsheets. In the morning, all that's wet will burn, will watch from inside. drying brine near Basque land, the yellowest capsules are found by Jorge, lacking sickly and so seafood, so Mollus Jorge removes his kit, screws on a needle, injects his blood into breakfast egg yolks, and the screaming seams for a meal, only inside himself.
October. Dave Stewart. I could not shake off the impression of having been submerged in someone's delirium. Like Saul Bellow's appointment with Trotsky on the day of the assassination, when arriving at the house after the event, being mistaken for a journalist and allowed to view the body. From Broadway and Camden out to Kagan Point to stare at South Philly's urban desolation across the river. In North Philadelphia, two-story 19th-century row houses, most dilapidated now, were built for people who worked in the riverfront factories. Immediately to the west, three-story houses for managers. Farther west, the factory owners' mansions on Broad Street. It had been our Osaka. Its present cityscape of prisons, beer distributors, bars, abandoned row houses, muscle cars, crack and cat houses, aluminum siding, takeout food litter and trash pile empty lots. Here in strip mall land, we have massively destructive airstrikes by terrorists and 767s, anthrax, the Christian right, Washington profiteers, bankers' derivatives, and hypocritical religious petroleum wars. And starkly, Beuys's Blitzschlager mit Lichtenstein, Alf Hirsch at Maus Mocha. As on the Indus in Dara Ghazi Khan, a skinny white horse moves at a trot while harnessed between a cart's shafts. Eyes rolling, lips lifted, it rears back in terror, trapped in a rolling bank of tear gas laid down by the Pakistani police against pro-Taliban rioters. Guernica. And following 1945, there was a clear world consensus that bombing civilians was in the league of using poison gas. But the United States has bombed civilians repeatedly in the years since, heavily, relentlessly, wanting to order the world. Colombia is a chronic, large-scale guerrilla conflict commanded by people who are sunk in delirium, funded by the hundreds of millions a year by North American drug users, 600 tons of Colombian cocaine and 10 tons of heroin annually. Recruiting the hopeless from poverty-ridden jungle villages at war against brutal right-wingers who are crazed by a spirit of vengeance. Ek grusige Weltlage, eine grusige Weltlage. All strangely apropos of Mala's Titan, scored for two piccolos, four flutes, four oboes, English horn, four clarinets, E-flat clarinet, bass clarinet, three bassoons, contrabassoon, seven horns, five trumpets, four trombones, tuba, kettle drums, bass drum, tom-tom, cymbals, triangle, harp, and the traditional strings. Marvelous Mahler. The main obstacle was his Jewish origins, so he accepted Catholic baptism in February 1897 and was appointed Kapellmeister at Vienna 2 months later. Stupendous Shostakovich. Would be pleasant right now to be absorbed with a family of energetic Tibetan ground jays, jay-hopping around the yaks and yurts, off on the grassy plains and foothill slopes, scattered boulders and sparse bushes above the Tibetan plateau's tree line. Jays behaving as jays everywhere, partial there to yak grazed pastures and cultivated ground near monasteries and small settlements. It is good that I did not let myself to be influenced. Wittgenstein. Waiting outside the Basel Munster's apse, fingering the seam of temblor cracks from the great earthquake in 1356. Chilled night river fog in light from a square with chestnut trees above the Rhine, exactly the site of a Roman forum. Fingering the deep tongue fillers and shims from matching sandstone cut to fit the cracks in the apse, tied in with iron jams soon after the event. In the improvising manner of their delicately contrived, Linares strong Gothic world, thoroughly apart from our plastic and epoxy-ordered world, our techno-standardized, numbing, noisy lives, where historical epiphanies are either intellectually enhanced insights or cheap, commercially induced thrills. Descantamiento. But aura of place is still there within a Romanesque or Gothic cathedral, Chinese or Greek temple, Roman ruin or Polynesian lava boulder wall, pre-Columbian plaza or pyramid site. In the air, hanging in a Roman arena 2,000 years ago, approach up the tunnel ramp, come out on the sand and glimpse the sun, stare at the high clouds as the sky looked 2,000 years ago above Arles and Pula and Nîmes. In the motion of the air is the past, both in imagined time and time present. In the Tour de France, topping a crest to run a turn, sinus so fast that when the peloton is gone, you remember no specifics of any rider, only their hissing, passing sizzle. Like the streamlined rush of air when rounding second, going for a triple. That reality. The moving air. Off from the stasis of stiff sedentaries with Ra's chaste eyes who live circumscribed in place. Coexistent with blasé insouciance of tens of thousands at any instant aloft in muttering jets, blinds down, oblivious to the verities of landscape scrolling out below. At rest, perhaps too much in self-sufficing solitude, as though it could have been written even in our time. Haydn reached far into the future with Finale, Fuga, a due, Gettete of his early F minor quartet, Opus 20, number 5. Plaintive, straining, moving directly into the remote key of A flat minor. Ahead, like the explosive second section of Schumann's Fantasy in C major, Opus 17, whose pianistic flares jump generations like fire shadows, back, forward, and on in continuous loops. The time of imagination is in no manner absolute. Attitudes toward mountains were beginning to shift in Europe, a sign of the medieval world slowly yielding to the modern one. Bruegel's landscape drawings, part fantasy, part faithful, seemed on the cusp of history. Michael Kimmelman. Bruegel passed across the Alps in the 1560s within months of Thomas Plather's last legendary transalpine journey, so he and Plather could well have met in Basel or on the track across the Jura. Plather's already modern sensibilities ranged ahead of his time, and they would have had a lot to say to each other. Watch a young Atlantic green turtle in a tidal pond sunning on a snag, eerie, wonderful, its front paddle feet hanging at the ready, a frisbee size, Chelonia, Midas, glowing green. To get a seat when traveling rough on the Indian National Railways, eat meat before boarding, and the smell will assure plenty of elbow room. And to get through airport security smoothly, smile copiously and hold level eye contact. Life is beautiful, but the world is hell. Antonia Fraser.
The warm earth. Not the sun dance, unless hooked to the sun, orange, out of bloom, bright, shrugging other, the fanning mock orange. He said, beam and rosin, a seasonless swimming light. Oh, maybe I'll be a star, shrugged the earth. The sun would be everywhere in any case. Blood orange the ladders in orbit. Cloud Trophy, after John Keats. Sloth Winter, Blue Lyra. Today more itself yesterday. Open and opener the sham. Dung-colored wren, blameless wren. Wren knocking on the house, fell behind. Earthquake, halo. Gold-lowing room of first and next, meridian. Interrogative the wire doves, huddled in the rain of pods. Camouflage of empty manes.
Paper bells. The paper bells hanging from the ceiling make no sound. Summer has begun. I stand naked in the afternoon, in the middle of the yard, watching my shadow spray like ink from my feet a part of night. A one-story house holding 60,000 gallons of gasoline. My head is a flame, throwing open the door to each blaze. My spirit can't take flight. The paper bells make no sound. Morning at O'Hare Airport. Fried coffee, elastic air, buttery smell, black trash cans, music mildly jazzy, sogginess. Airplanes taking off, airplanes landing, I'm not glad. Escalators rolling, the crowd, compromises. Rainbows of words for advertisement, waste of color. History on television, waste of blood. Crap food, restrooms flush noisily. 1858. The camera pans the face of a mountain. Artificial light launched from the cannons of warships anchored in the Gulf of Touraine makes bats fall from the palace ceilings and blood redden the river Hung. The camera's position is no accident. In 1858, it aimed to civilize this nation by the seventh art. 146 years later, we're still making serial porn.
The Collectors. We drive and drive and drive. I remember McDonald's Happy Meal toys and SpaghettiO dinners out of cans, and eventually end up in Maine. This is our last family vacation before I get braces with orange rubber bands, and my brother starts lying about who he hangs out with after 9, but none of us knows this yet. Maine is all wind and coastline, and we share beds in motel rooms, where Mom won't let us walk on the floor in bare feet. Lice and foot fungus, our greatest enemies. I meet a boy in the parking lot who doesn't say much, but who can keep a basketball spinning on his finger for over a minute. I watch the humming basketball, and it makes me want to tell him secrets. Sometimes I think the world is held together by power lines, I almost say. Also, I chew and chew away at my left thumbnail, and sometimes I worry that I won't be able to stop. But then Dad pulls me back inside, and neither of us says anything. My family sleeps. Our scalps are clean and liceless in the morning, and I wake up with my body curled around my mother's like we're hibernating squirrels, or like she's a snail and I'm her shell. For breakfast, I am given crackers smeared in peanut butter that coats the roof of my mouth. Then, as the sun rises, we drive to the coast. I see the Atlantic for the first time, and I understand why early explorers thought the world was flat. The beach is abandoned and rocky and colorful with stones that my parents can put names to, because before my brother and I were born, they were geologists. We wander dazed over the shore. We are blinded by the colors and the bigness of the ocean, and by the clear jellyfish trapped, like large drops of water, between the stones. Without saying anything, we all think the same thing. We want to take it home with us. There are rotting board signs near the road with warnings about removing parts of the beach. But my parents say that just this once, it's okay. So, our bodies bent in the shape of sevens, we fill up our pockets with pebbles and purple broken shells. We are content. We sit on the rocks, and my brother and I dare each other to wade in the water until our hair is full of seaweed and our underwear full of silt. But when we get tired, we go back to collecting broken shark teeth and clam shells we find in tide pools and washed up in the surf. We collect without thinking at first, and then with purpose. Soon our pockets bulge and we drop shells and cookie crumb trails behind us. Somehow we've gotten greedy. When our pockets are full, we open up our palms, our canvas beach bags, our plastic lunch boxes. Mom and Dad fill up two large garden buckets that they had brought in case one of us needed to puke on the winding coastal roads. We pack them with granite and quartz and oyster shells and rocks that were once part of a volcano and the shell of a dead horseshoe crab, which we balance on the very top of everything so it won't be crushed. There's nothing left to fill, and suddenly we're nervous. Mom asks Dad how often the park ranger checks this part of the beach, and he shakes his head, looking at the road. He tells us it's time to go. We carry our boxes and bags up to the van and load them in. The only place for the buckets is on the floor by the back seats, so my brother and I sit with our feet lifted up and rested on their edges. Dad starts the engine and rolls down the windows. The sun is a red stain on the water as we follow the street lamps down the coastline. We reach the highway. We close the windows and switch on the AC, and I drift off to sleep. When I wake, we are still on the road, and the smell of salt and sea and dead sea creatures fills the van. I gag and reach for a bucket, but instead I grab the rough edge of a horseshoe crab. It stares at me with empty eyes, and I wonder what we've done. I run my hands over its back, over the point of its tail. I remember something I learned once but had forgotten, that the crabs predate man, flying insects, dinosaurs. I think about millions of years buried in the mud. I think about the slow passing on of genes and of an animal that grows a new shell, a new self, every year. I think about an entire world connected by lines.
The Bindery. 1. In the photo, I'm 7. It's Saturday, and my father sits beside me on the steps at Lakefire Road. I smell his salt skin, old spice, a Winston burning low. On his arm, Ajax tattooed in Gothic script. Two pupils pierce the smoke. Darkness, even shadows couldn't escape. You hear people talk about climbing walls. I climbed walls. To taste ink and sweat brings back the noon whistle. The porch railing I think I clutched for years. As a 7-year-old, his cracked lips smile, speak the wish he could take back, his blood and sweat. I live to die in debt. 2. The boy held the gun, crying at the all-too-real mess heads made. Cars arrived, blues flashing, tires crunching the gravel drive. Who fathered the man who fathered me? Whispering close to my face about Smash Mouth, basketball games on concrete courts, his razor wire irises froze my soul. Part of me believes my father incapable of killing. Another part believes he turned the gun against himself, wrote his blood name on that wall, a gorgon's head, a mirror and trophy, for the man whose stains even mighty Ajax couldn't bleach out. 3. The bit of honey my father and I shared on that car ride to the city remains the sun's warmth on my legs, each sliver a Saturday morning to carry with me. Steel drums, inks and acids, concrete, fluorescent lights, presses, cutters, folders, hydraulic skids, pallets of paper. We played guns with rubber bands long as my 7-year-old arms. Our laughter rang like shrieks from the gulls we threw pizza crust to out the window, and they'd catch and swoop. Feathers snapping, fluttering, tucked into air, beaks arrowing, falling stairs. Pure vertigo and shafts of light hung there, then darted from sight. 4. At lunch, the pressmen and cutters let me be, but one day want me to come to where the windows overlook the dormitories at MIT. Part of me believes they knew we could see, another part believes they didn't care, or liked to be watched. All us workers line the windows, eating and staring from an entire world away. Those beautiful young girls, even if they knew they were beautiful, never knew how beautiful they were to us on break from machines demanding we be machines. 5. My father liked playing the girl in the children's poem that kept picking her nose until the razor toothed monster in her nostril bit the top digit off. Weeks after the bandages, the nub still looked like bone, pushing through, and he'd pretend to pick, then pull his chopped pinky out with an ouch. Our bodies jiggled with laughter, but when I asked what happened, his brow tensed. He spoke very close to my face. I told you, a monster lives up there. 6. My father killed himself so slowly no one noticed, so he kept living. At holidays, still scarf second servings of turkey. I bear witness. He sweat and bled to pay our rent. Never bitched about eating dogs and beans. Read Tom Clancy on the can and died a prisoner to a factory clock. His gravel voice whispered bones, whispered blood. His hands wore ink stains. He lived a child of metaphor. Offspring of inmates and guards. In the end, my father earned the grave he sought and knows no need of these benedictions. 7. Down to the side, like the razor edge on a book cutter's blade, I remember growing up with my father on Lake Fire Road, and my face shows me his face. 70 hours a week he labored as a bookbinder and lost parts unsavable by surgeons with 100 texts on suture. When we wrestled, he'd rear on his knees like a bear and roar, tickling until we thrashed, too speechless to beg him to stop. Now, my best hopes set the machinery of mills and presses in motion. Betrayal and gift sending men like him to their bindery.
Badness by Michael Lewis. Badness said, Rebecca wants me to take her picture. She wants me to take lots of pictures. She wants me to meet her at a house on the other side of town, and she wants me to take naked pictures of her. Badness said, Rebecca is going to wear some old lingerie type stuff, frilly stuff. See-through stuff, buckles and straps and clasps and leggings and boots and things, 1920s honeymoon stuff, and she wants me to follow her around this big empty house while she pouts and strips from room to room. Badness said, her ex-stepdad has this house out on the west side. It's empty. He keeps a suitcase there when he's in town on business, but nobody's there, ever. And Rebecca and Erica are sleeping there, getting high, calling in sick to work, whatever. And so one morning they go up to the attic. We're talking parting the cobwebs with your whole arm. We're talking flashlights and peeled paintings. There's an owl skeleton and old dolls and petrified animal shit. They find this furniture, these chests, and they start going through them. men's clothes mostly, but in one they find all this sex gear. Not like dildos, but leather and veils and lace. They've been there a week, parading around, and now they want some company. Badness said, I don't want to go alone. We had things to say to one another, but couldn't. My mother was dead, and his was long gone. Our fathers had become like absent older brothers. They had hard jobs in Kentucky and dated poorly. They cried on the phone and inherited to us a shared sense of silence. Badness and I couldn't talk about it the rest of the day. He had a photo shoot for a local Boy Scout troop raising money for shoeless kids, and I had an editorial due about the gray lady in Willard Library. Someone had seen her. There was the strong smell of perfume, and the ghost touched someone's hair. Rebecca opened the door, and then her robe, and the hallway. She said she wanted to get it out of the way. She reminded me of old paintings of naked women. Erica appeared. She was smoking a very short cigarette. She hugged Badness, then she hugged me. I felt her hips under her silk robe. Her skin reminded me of milk. They were both barefoot and in pancake makeup, their lips the shade of candy apples. Badness rolled a joint. Erica made vodka greyhounds, and Rebecca walked slowly around a piano in the main room, now and then stopping beside it to run her fingers over the keys. I hovered. The house was very still. It smelled empty. I remembered when I was a kid just home from school, and my brother and I had the house alone, how we'd go through our father's drawers and slip on his rings and spray his cologne on ourselves. We found Playboys and chewing tobacco, and my first chaw made me dizzy and hot. In the living room, I fingered a large book about North American birds. There were mirrors everywhere, and the wallpaper was worn and stained. Badness took out his camera. It was heavy, and it thunked when he set it down. He said he took great pride in his equipment. I made a joke no one laughed at about freelance gynecology. We all just kind of sat there, chewing ice. Then someone made some sort of announcement, and we climbed the stairs. Everything creaked. Rooms were entered, and I could hear Badness's camera clicking through the wall. Later, we were all four in the same bed. There was a lamp in the corner made from a shotgun. Smoke sat in the air. Erica had a magic eight ball she shook and shook. We were boy, girl, boy, girl. Rebecca stood up and moved to the end of the bed. She was naked. She said she loved the word covet. It was her new favorite. She said it a few times in funny voices. Her hands on her hips and something like a valley girl. Don't you just, like, totally covet my body? What if I had on a corset? And my corset I would, like, totally covet. Then she said it all slow and weird like the guy from Sling Blade. I've been out cavorting in my corset, looking to covet. Mm-hmm. Then she dove back under the covers. Our bodies seemed outlined, like lakes on a map. Everybody knew where everybody was. Badness had his camera, and it went back and forth. Click, 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 click. Rebecca rubbed Badness under the covers and snatched his camera. Capture, she said. Give me something to capture. Isn't that what they tell models? Move your head this way. Now roll your eyes. Now smile. Close your mouth. Now look ashamed. Look naughty. Look caught. Oh, don't make that face. You always make that face. Look at me. Under the dusty covers, in a bed that hadn't been slept in who knows how long, there we were. Someone asked the magic eight ball a question. Someone said the word virginity. Rebecca asked Badness about his first time, and he didn't have to lie. Not too many guys lose it in the back seat of a Camry to a girl who claimed Ted Nugent as her biological father. Rebecca's first time was with a boy she hardly knew. He was from Illinois, and one of his eyebrows was white. She said that's all it took. They were camping, and she said she picked ticks out of her crotch for 2 days. Mine was boring. We wrote each other long letters. She claimed Christ as her savior. I took her for tacos and then bought condoms at Kmart. Erica's was with a guy whose dad owned a cement company. She said they kept knocking teeth. I joked about them doing it in wet cement and then putting down handprints afterwards. She said they rented a movie, did it, and then he surprised her with a kitten. So Badness told them about Floyd. Floyd was Badness's first cat, and he was tough, but he got on a trampoline with a group of kids, and Floyd snapped like a stick. I told a story about catching a frog in the garage, and my brother and me dropping a brick on it until the frog turned into brown ash. My mother was alive then, and when we told her what we'd done, she made us dig a hole in the yard for the frog. She made us whisper to the dirt and swear to her we were sorry. Badness told a story of feeding Pop Rocks to his pet rabbit when he was little. He never wanted the rabbit in the first place. He had to share it with his sister. He wanted to kill it, he said, the minute he saw it. So the rabbit ate the Pop Rocks one day instead of lettuce, and it had purple juice coming out its nose, and it tried to hop, but instead it just didn't. His sister shrieked. Badness said it was the only time his dad ever hit him, open-palmed, in front of all the neighborhood kids. Badness cried. We were in bed. Badness cried. And I said to no one, "Fucking rabbit." Bedbugs by Kyle Hemmings. In bed, he has the sensation of bugs crawling on his skin. She regresses to childhood carnivals, a clown in red and white paint, a smile just for her. On school days, she was smaller than everyone. In the morning, over instant coffee and poppy seed muffins that leave crooked trails and paper plates, she brings up the subject again. "It's a done deal," he says. "When you're caught, you're caught." She turns, putting on her best Kim Kardashian took-me-by-surprise face on talk shows. "You're only monogamous at close range," she counters. "God knows what you do with the girls from customer service." She thinks certain types of women are attracted to men with club feet. "You're going to miss me when I'm gone," is what she adds. He says, "How can I miss you when you're not even gone yet?" Crumbs fall from his mouth. She opens the apartment door for the morning paper. Under it is an ant. It's not moving. Lately, she's been suspecting that the building needs fumigating. The thought of bug spray making her nauseous. But throughout the day, she keeps thinking about that dead ant, what kind of unconscious life it had, how it survived in a world where everything was heavier than it, how it never felt the crush. Gross Fable 2 by Kyle Hemmings. Today, the astronauts have returned with their lunar soliloquies. Two of them are your ex-lovers, the other, a closet android waiting to discover same sex with parallel partners. You invite the two exes to your house and pull gravity from under their feet. One panics. You're reminded of your childhood parakeet let loose in the house. Poor neurotic thing dropped from exhaustion. You went mad for weeks. Then you put on aviator goggles and withdrew from the world. The other promises he'll do anything if you give him back the ability to fall logarithmically, the vertical tendency towards dense. His lies remind you of the ease of gaseous exchange in a world of liquid need and solid resource. But since you're wearing your space shoes, lead with custom soles, you have no need for men forever stuck on their uppity selves.
After Cam found out about the cult that worshipped him, Van brought things to her attention with less reserve. Cam enjoyed how he stayed Van, no creature pronged with sinister new spines. They went on vacation together in the city, where he bought her opera guitar and said he had a friend from childhood named Cassie. They found her in a cool white building on an empty street. Cassie had a couch and an open fridge and was slender, white, and wet. She told Cam it was the fashion to be slathered in solution that did not get absorbed by the skin and hair, but left one slick and gleaming like the newborn Venus. She applied the solution to a smaller girl. Both of them smiled uncontrollably. A blast of eye-watering air hit Cam when she closed their fridge. They smiled, glowed, clapped their hands running over each other, talked and giggled faintly, freely, like they had done before Van and Cam stepped in, would do so after. Even though their eyes were fixed on Cam and Van with the timorousness and completeness of beams of light, Van bashed into the door jamb. The smaller one said a prayer to him.
Fourth Tenochtitlan. Over the howling valley of some god's throat, breath warm and rank, high-hopped beer and grain alcohol in plastic bottles by night, burnt coffee and diesel by morning, and nothing but the dry mouth of hunger during the day. It's nebulas of insects, deep-proof beasts with beaks and wings thicker than glass, no eyelash hairs for legs, no pinpoint eyes, nebulas, galaxies of beetles, a colony of roaches in the cast-iron stove. A continent of downy aeronauts floats over the city. The tectonic city shifts like an uneasy plate jostling its neighbors for space. But the down, for all its fluff, weighs more than lead. But the down sticks to the city like cement. The green eyes of a monstrous butcher guard the edges of the sinkhole. His cleaver is dull, but still he uses it with vigor. He chops with squawk and flame like a gunshot, like he's stalking the bovine corpses from a deer stand, and he is silent with his mouth. A plane passes by. At night, they're like jewels on an invisible string, descending into protracted numbness, the hollow laughter of old friends, the boys that gargle gasoline on corners to make a meal's worth of change. The condors have their cage barred with volcanic peaks. They feed themselves the carrion that litters the streets, dog meat, goat meat, chickens and hares sacrificed to the rich, to the tires of cars, discarded.
The newspapers say you're 2 packs a day, flavored like souvenir cigars, bus exhaust, fruit rot, soured smoke of boiling hops, trash and burnt plastic, limited edition, ashfall. Hide the city like asterisks hide the U's and I's of fucks and shits. Like string bikinis cover nipples. A sheet-draped mass on the highway shoulder. Smog flags like riptide warnings at the beach. Stay indoors if red, walk if orange, light sports if yellow, if green, fine. Never green. Earwax gray. Mucus marbled black. You taught my lungs to
Irina Yevsa, don't whine, just eat your soup. Don't whine, just eat your soup. Winter hangs by a hair. A muddy march slid down the rails and strained its muscles in a resolute clench as grave as Japanese nostalgia for the Kurils. Divine barbiturates drip from the boughs. In country cellars, the preserves have been flooded. But the morning screeches with a parliament of crows who couldn't care less about the people's troubles. A multi-storied monster looks out from under its swollen eyelids, sleepy still, but shakes it off. The place houses more souls than the landlord allows. Bums in the attic, rats in the basement. Yet you're here too, drug smuggler of the blues, dropping a tear into your piping hot soup. What if we all decided, within our holes, to crawl out into the light, a ragtag group, swelling like yeasted dough, bursting eardrums, fed up with the lies of the imperial jester, since, as one rebellious spirit asked us, what else does a hell dweller have to fear? Irina Yevsa, Nikhnich, Khlebai Svoy Soup. Нихныч, хлебай свой суп. Висит на волоске зима. Чумазый март скатился по перилам, и мускулы напряг в решительном броске, опасном, как тоска японцев по курилам. И капает с ветвей небесный карвало в хозяйских погребах подтопленный соленья. Но утро верещит парламентом ворон, которому плевать на беды населения. Многоэтажный монстр из-под набрякших век взирает сон, стряхнув, но выспавшись едва ли, вмещая больше душ, чем полагает Жек. На чердаке бомжи, крысиний полк в подвале. А тут еще и ты, наркокурьер Хандри, роняющий слезу в рассольник раскаленный. Что, ежели на свет всякий своей дыры мы выпасть и решим расхлябиной колонной, растя, как на дрожжах, терзая гулом слух, насытившись брехней верховного паяца, поскольку, как сказал один мятежный дух, живущему в аду чего еще бояться? Ирина Евса, South Station. April diligently tills and turns up the earth, airing out its depths. The fussy city square with its flock of pigeons flutters down into blueness and rests amid the noise of splashing, flapping, flitting. Meanwhile, you hang around in the open like some confused or simple-minded assistant who's been dismissed from all her jobs. And near the flower bed, a mob of swallows chatters in the local tongue till dusk, fighting for every scrap and morsel on the stones, clan against clan. The wind bursts in from near the seventh platform and brings a shiver of moist night air. The last commuter train arrives on schedule. The express from Kiev is running late. While someone rides inside, despairing completely, and reads a tattered paperback. He gives a slice of cake to his companion, buying his freedom with a snack, to keep from being reduced to panicked muttering. Instead, he seeks and finds that place where you come into view, looming featureless, a cigarette between your lips. Ирина Евса, Южный вокзал. Апрель прилежно землю вспахивает, проветривая глубину,
и площадь голубями вспархивает в брезгливую голубизну, где шумно плещется, полощется. А ты болтаешься, вольна, как бестолковая помощница, что от работы отстранена. За корм, проклюнувшийся в сурике, видя локальные бои, до сумерек на бойком суржике трещат ту клумбы воробьи. Шестой платформы тянет ворванью, а знобом сырости ночной. Приходит пригородный вовремя, опаздывает скоростной, в котором некто едет, мучится, читает скверный детектив, пирожным почует попутчицу, свободу с нетью оплатив, чтоб, не вникая в бормотание, в окне нашарит точку ту, где ты, утратив очертания, стоишь цигарочкой во рту. Ирина Евса, How Are Things in Eden? How are things in Eden? Not so great, wandering friend, since you left us. The clouds out there look crushed, especially at night, just like slept-on, tear-stained pillows. Unwittingly, the pointed heel of your shoe breaks right through the dark red soil. The rain, meanwhile, hangs midair like bamboo, slender shafts completely still. Nobody buzzes palms like a bumblebee, stalling out on a stressed syllable during the climb to a place where, stunned by the heat, blackthorn rustles on a gentle hillock. Where the people, as usual, refuse to combine tables, but split up instead by ethnos. The Arabs are evil, the Germans always on time, and the French are as stingy as ever. No matter what you do, you can't get close to them with A or B, not with C either. And that is why a Slav feels completely lost when he drops by a kabuki theater. And as it was before, when you and I screwed up every day in silence, now it seems that you've begun to rely on me too much, although it's pointless. The ground feels as hot as it does in the summer, but the winter blue sky remains my focus. And two birds alight on two shoulders, sin ne anno and sin ne loco. Ирина Евса, что в твоем Эдеме? Что в твоем Эдеме? Не сладко, чай, кочевая моя подружка. Там примято облако по ночам, как заплаканная подушка. Длину темно-красную твой каблук пробивает насквозь невольно, а дожди висят, как растет бамбук, неподвижно и тонкоствольно. И никто стихи не гудит шмелем, замыкая ударным слогом путь наверх, где зноем ошеломлен терн шуршит на холме пологом, где народ не хочет сдвигать столы, как всегда, поделясь на группы. Пунктуальны немцы, арабы злы, а французы все так же скупы. Ни за что не сможешь прибиться к ним ты, хранящая ас и буки. Так впадает в оторопь славянин, залетевший в театр кабуки. И как в прошлой жизни, где мы ни дня не сгубились с тобой безгласно, ты опять надеешься на меня, но, по-видимому, напрасно. Почва мне по-летнему горяча, высь по-зимнему синеока, и слетят две птицы на два плеча, синне Анно и синне Лёко.